Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Source of Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. You can tell it's the end of the summer. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. You're that car that won't start, and I'm trying to hold back a sneeze here, so...
Cool.
Just a heads up for the listeners there. If you hear a blasting sound, that's not all the construction on campus. That's actually me.
Okay.
I was like, what?
Although, construction is winding down. I mean,
well,
only certain sections of the bottom floor of the UC are blocked off now, which is good because, you know, there's only 36 hours until...
The clock's ticking, so bring your GPS if you're in the University Center because you're going to need it to find a sandwich.
Yeah, it's good. Good times. Open Source is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians. This week, though, we will be sticking to the news, including some pre-election controversy, and not the liberal variety. But the liberals are part of this. They dug up a video with Andrew Scheer making a speech against same-sex marriage. So is this fair game, or is it just some good old-fashioned mudslinging? And then Donald Trump, a young man we'll be hearing a lot more about in the future, is going to have to face a couple of primary challengers for the 2020 GOP primary. What does 45 have anything to worry about, if he has anything to worry about? And does such a thing as a moderate GOP member still exist? And then finally, the crisis in Kashmir. It remains hot. We'll talk about why we should be paying attention to this and what's happening now in this contentious region sandwiched between two nuclear powers. But first, speaking of Donald Trump, the G7 took place last weekend, and it was, as always, an affair to remember. Doubly so if you're Melania Trump.
Ooh, yes.
I mean, that picture is, the bigger picture is on our website of... they were getting ready to do the quote-unquote family photo, and Justin Trudeau goes to stand next to Melania Trump, and the look on her face.
Yes, I mean, there's a bit of trickery there. They did the two-cheek kiss, as people do in when they're in France.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they just found the right frame where it looked...
Oh, yeah, you just set your camera to continuous, and you get all the frames.
She did look happy enough, which is fine, but it's amazing how that became the focus, and that's probably because very little else happened, right? Realistically, what was accomplished there?
Well, I mean, for Trudeau, it was a very Trudeau conference because, like, the news he made was he's wearing pink socks.
Yeah.
Melania looked like she was on the cover of a romance novel with
the
him.
Wind blowing just so, yeah.
The third thing was he went out jogging one morning.
Oh,
and,
I didn't know that one. Lots of accidental pictures were taken by his
Yeah,
people.
There was a lot of photo bombing, and there was one scene where he's an Australian TV reporter, I think, was doing a live shot, and Trudeau went running by going, bonjour.
And, he had a croissant in his mouth and a beret.
And the reporter was like, was that just freaking Justin Trudeau?
Did eight guys with earpieces, were they jogging behind him? Or
well, I'm sure he had security nearby, but he looked
like, oh God, we have to go jogging again?
Yeah.
It was like in House of Cards, like those guys didn't like jogging behind. Anyway.
Well, that was an episode of The West Wing, too, where the only time that the vice president had available for one of the staffers was when he was jogging. And so I think it was Josh. Josh had to go jogging with Vice President Tim Matheson that time. Anyway. Moving right
the
along.
Running tracking shots. Yes.
We're not talking about White
Who's
Houses.
Who's jogging?
We don't want to talk about White Houses we wished existed.
Yeah.
Or maybe we do. But no. It was kind of an unsubstantive G7, even though there was so much substantive stuff going on. I think that was kind of like by design. We are at the phase, I think, where the other world leaders are like, we can't work with Donald Trump. He's not going to do anything. At best, we can just make sure he leaves happy so he's not tweeting BS on the way home on Air Force One. which is what happened last year, is that, like, I'm not signing this communique. I'm out of here. Trudeau, you let me down, man, or something. And
but yet this time he's being nice to Trudeau on Twitter. I take it you saw the Ezra Levant was trying to get the shot in. And
Well, actually, I didn't see it because Ezra Levant blocks me.
Oh. Oh, well, it was, you know.
I know what you mean, though.
I'm not blocked yet, but I don't follow him, but we'll see. Maybe I'm pre-blocked. He's in a pre-blocked state.
He's in a pre-blocked position.
Yeah, so Levant tried to get a shot in, and Trump retweeted, like, Levant was like, oh, Trudeau, he's not a leader, and look at his socks kind of stuff.
Lightweight, yeah.
And Trump was, no, actually, we had a very good, productive meeting. So Trump actually turned the table a little bit on Levant, so.
Yeah.
Ezra needs to get out more. Ezra needs to listen to open sources, find out what's going on.
Well, you could always unblock me.
Yeah. I need to check now whether I'm blocked. You're blocked. You're blocked, too.
But yeah, I mean, that was kind of the best case scenario thing, was like just like letting Trump leave.
Peacefully.
Peacefully.
Relatively
quietly.
relatively.
But I mean, you know, in the meantime, there's like a ton of, like, he generated a ton of controversy on his way out the door, including the 68-minute like free-balling press conference. That
was it that long?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I think that's.
I only ever watch the highlights. That's all I can take.
That's including the portion with Macron. Because what happens is they were doing
behind the podiums.
Press conference, and yeah. It was like the two questions, and then Macron's like, okay, peace out, and Trump's like, next question, and then he takes questions for another like 40
some
minutes.
Macron's like, I'm needing the loo, I have to go, or something. Right? Oh, mon Dieu.
Well, I mean, he's the host, and like he's got to do like hosty things, and like he's
hosty,
not like Trump,
hosty.
who has all sorts of executive time to fill.
I'm just going to be sitting on the toilet tweeting, let's talk. Yeah, when he gets his moment, he really rolls with it.
Yeah.
And not necessarily in a good way.
Yeah, so what was there? There was him like pondering about having the next G7, because he's the host of the next G7, or I should say the United States is the host.
At one of his places in Florida.
The Trump National Doral, which is one of his tacky resorts in Florida.
Sounds perfect. Sounds ideal.
Well, it's according to Trump, it's like ideally situated to the Miami airport. It's got lots of accommodations, and it's like, well, it's...
And rumored to have bed bugs too, but I don't know if you heard.
Well,
that
I don't think it's rumored to have bed bugs. I think
it probably
it has bed bugs, but it's also one of the Trump properties that has suffered under Donald Trump pursuing politics,
like his abandoned casino in Atlantic City.
Well, yeah, I mean those were closed before he became president.
No, but there's a pattern, right?
Well, there is a pattern, because one of the sort of underreported stories that it was either earlier this week or last week was that his golf courses in the UK are suffering. So, I mean, Donald Trump's the businessman who can't make casinos work in Atlantic City, and he's the businessman that can't make golf courses work in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
he's
the
a good
environment
businessman.
Is definitely suffering on the Scottish one up near Aberdeen. It's that's a whole other story, probably.
Well,
we talked about it last election, actually.
Good segue, because that's he said he wants the best environment, he wants the cleanest water, he wants the cleanest air. And that was after he skipped the environmental portion of the G7 and then lied about it.
Yeah, well, where did he go instead?
Nobody knows where he went.
He just went to the hotel.
Probably in his room watching Fox News.
Cheeseburgers.
But he said he was meeting with Merkel and Narendra Modi, two people who were at the climate change meeting.
We're going for grilled cheese. Yeah, so they didn't, yeah. But yeah, speaking of environment too, one of the back and forth out of this was the money that was going to be contributed by the G7 to the fires in Brazil. Mm. So, you know, Amazon burning is like a perfect metaphor for probably G7 and everything. But
well,
Matt,
it is because the Trump of the tropics
Trump
is
of the, tropics.
The head of Brazil. And
Bolsonaro was very offended by Macron. But it sounds like Bolsonaro got his own offensive remarks and something to do with Macron's wife. I don't want to get too much into the, you know, G-Talk Nightly gossip of the thing, but it sounds like they insulted each other, presumably. But it's like, I'm not taking your fire aid package, you know. The Amazon can burn until you apologize to me. It's like, there's no logic there whatsoever. But so much of the, I won't say it. I was going to use an epithet. But anyway. so much of the world is run by Bolsonaro types.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Ridiculous. I mean, first of all, the 20 million promise. I thought I misheard that the first time. It's like, it's got to be 20 billion. But no, it was 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like the budget for like a really low budget movie. So it's like
straight to DVD.
One,
if that, right? Yeah.
One tenth, not even a tenth, like 1/20th of what it costs to make an Avengers movie. We're going to invest in putting out these like potentially world-ending calamitous fires. Although Justin Trudeau came out, I think, after that announcement and said that Canada was also going to give an extra $15 million plus water bomber.
And are they taking that? Like they don't seem to want a G7 deal, anything to do with Macron, but...
I haven't heard otherwise, but I mean, the thing with Bolsonaro is just, you know, he spent most of his week spinning. He was like, oh no, it's the conservationists' fault and it's the NGO's fault.
That's right, they set
fault.
The fires. Yeah, of course they did.
And then they were like, and then it was kind of like proven like, no, that doesn't make any sense. And then he kind of shifted to like, oh, well, you know, fires happen, whatever. It's all good. And, I mean, forgetting the fact that it's kind of his constituency that's kind of responsible for the fires, like the farmers and the industrialists and the developers.
So we didn't do it. I mean, there are fires in the Amazon, obviously, but this is some kind of record, obviously. And it sounds like it kind of ties into the U.S.-China trade war. China has shut out American soybeans, and mm-hmm. they had to find another source for them. So, of course, where did they go? They didn't come to Canada. They went to Brazil, who are pumping out record numbers. So there is demand there.
Yeah.
So there's this whole kind of machine behind it. It's not obviously specifically responsible for the fires in the Amazon, but it has been said that it's you know, definitely a part of it.
But yeah, and it's part of the vacuum of leadership because, like, Bolsonaro's, what part of Bolsonaro's argument against Macron was like, oh, you're being very imperialistic and very colonial. And it's like, dude, like, that was Portugal, first of all, in your instance. Yeah. Second of all, This is the kind of thing where the president of the United States, definitely have a voice that would be able to be heard better because you couldn't level that. Well, you could level an imperialism charge against the United States to an extent, but you certainly can't
all
level
of them.
A colonialism charge because the United States was a colony as well.
Well, they've had their share of colonialism, but then, you know.
But I mean, this is also an area, too, where like we see this a lot with Donald Trump, where he knows things are right. And he knows things are wrong, and he also knows when stuff like is going to appeal to the base.
Yeah,
and sometimes that stuff comes into conflicting. And you know, what would be more Trump than to go after another a-hole president?
Yes.
And say like, no, you're going to take our money, and you're going to fix the rave, you're going to rake that up, and it's going to be beautiful, or something to that effect.
Raking, yeah. Amazon needs a good raking.
But of course, you know, because his base is going to be like, well, that's foreign aid, we hate that. That's helping the environment, we hate
environmentalists, we hate everything, we hate all small L liberal commie crap, we hate it. And it sounded like Trump was looking for a friend at the G7 because he brought up, you know, we should...
Because he has none.
Yeah. So we should bring Russia back. Russia should come back. And everybody's
yes.
Well,
good.
No. Specifically, I think Germany, UK, and Canada were like,
Well, I think everybody
no.
was like that. Like, even Boris Johnson was like, we really can't have Russia
back. Johnson was sort of surprised. Like, I saw one thing where he contradicted Trump, like, we actually prefer a lot trade, as opposed to, I think it was when Trump made that comment about the trade war. It's like, oh, they're good with the tariffs. We're good with tariffs. And
look,
Boris
is
like, no, more trade is better, or whatever he said.
Look, Boris Johnson looks like somebody who just like rolled out of bed and can't find his car keys. But he went to Eton at the end of the day, so he knows better. He's good at playing the buffoon. But
that's part of the shtick.
He's smart enough to know better. And so that's why he's on this side.
Smart enough to know how to spell prorogue, but that's another story. I had to wait till the G7 was over for that.
Yeah, that
Give
was...
Give me a P.
That was sneaky.
Yeah, very sneaky. But I don't think it's going to last. That's a tease for the future. That's definitely going to be a topic.
Because I think Parliament goes into session again next week.
Yeah.
And
it sounds like there's some blue rebels going to bring the whole thing down among the others. But
well, it'll be It'll be interesting. But yeah,
Stay tuned, folks.
The Russia thing is just bizarre because it's one of these unforced errors that people that makes people go, what is it with you and Putin anyway? Because he's the only one sitting there going, Putin. Like, it's like everyone should be asking, where's Poochie? What's Poochie up to? Where's Putin? What's Putin up to? And it's just like,
Poochie went back to his home planet. That
every single person in Congress who wants you keel hauled in an impeachment hearing, like, when you say stuff like that, that's another.
It's like evidence almost making itself.
Yes.
Generating itself.
It's another memo for the for the evidentiary file. It's crazy how.
I never said that. I didn't want to say that.
All right. Speaking of stuff people wish they didn't say, or maybe. Andrew Scheer, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, there was an attack ad that was posted, I think, by Ralph Goodale initially. He took the
charge. Gotta let the veteran
charge.
Post that kind of
an
stuff.
An old CPAC video of Andrew Scheer making a speech when the House was debating same-sex marriage, saying that he did not believe in same-sex marriage because same-sex couples couldn't have babies, you know, the old-fashioned way, which is the only correct way. I guess. But it's provoked a lot of interesting questions. First of all, is it fair game? Because, you know, certainly you could go back in time and find a lot of liberals who were against same-sex marriage at the time, including the member of Parliament for Guelph at the time.
That's right. Brenda Chamberlain did vote against that. I remember that.
Yes, she did.
And
yes, she did.
So, yeah, it's one of those. They who were without sin, 32 liberals voted against that, actually. Three conservatives voted for it. So it was a free vote, though, back then.
Yeah.
Now, some of the talk is it wasn't really fair to go back in time and dig this up. But you know that all of the parties, or at least the ones with the resources, are doing the dig right now and finding whatever muck that they can, because that's how it works. And actually, I thought about it. This is sort of a bit of an aside, but Ruth Davidson, the head of the Scottish Tories, is probably stepping down, who is a gay woman and had a baby with her partner. And I was thinking about Scheer when I saw this article about her. Oh, she has announced her resignation. There you go. This just in. In a bit of crossover, but it's like, so, you know, you're going to tell a fellow conservative across the pond, it's like, whether he still believes that or not, he hasn't come out and said, I refute everything that I said. He did say that he supports same-sex marriage as defined by law, and as prime minister, he will uphold it. But that doesn't really introduce the he didn't say, you know, I deny what I said, because it's definitely play to the base stuff. It was painful little speech to watch, eh? Because he's just a kid, essentially. He's 25. I don't know how he made speaker however many years later. It would have been the 6 or 7 years later, because to see that, it's a pretty shaky performance from what he said aside, like other than what he said aside, but that whole dog legs and tails thing. I mean, that's, you know, you're pretty much, it's your very tacit way, roundabout way of saying,
sort of,
well, you'll be marrying your dog. Which,
I mean,
is
it's
one
a reminder
of
how far, like, queer rights have come, because I mean,
and that's
that was
not that long ago.
That wasn't out 2005, of left field.
Like, yeah.
That wasn't like...
I was sitting here.
That wasn't like Bernier getting up there and like, you know what? Immigration isn't Canadian values.
We want the less. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, it's not that long ago, too. There's a lot of... We'll get into the American politics in a bit, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on about like, oh, Joe Biden had this position back in the day and he passed this legislation. And that seems to be the thing. It's like, you aren't as woke... You weren't as woke then as you say you are woke now.
40 years ago, you said this.
Right, and that's... I'm starting... Not really starting, but I've always had kind of like an uncertain feeling about that. Like, at the time, yeah, we can look back at 1994 and say, like, that crime bill was regressive and ended up putting a lot of people in color behind bars for, like, nonviolent crimes.
Yep.
It was based on specious evidence that we've come to realize, like... just, you know, creates more prisoners, creates more gridlock, creates more people who end up having uncertain futures when they get out. It helps spur the cycle of in and out of the revolving door of prisons and such. And it's like, but at you have to remember, in 1994, coming off the LA riots, coming off of like Waco, coming off of the 80s and, you know, all the crime, the rising violent crime in the 80s, that made sense. So to go back and attack Joe Biden or whoever now is outside. I mean, it's again, it's fair game because it's their voting record.
Yeah.
But what have they done lately? I want to talk about what people have done lately. And when it comes to Andrew Scheer, what I want to talk about is what has he done lately? I can tell you what he hasn't done lately, which is go to any Pride events.
Exactly. And he's being called on that. And Scheer is saying, well, they're just digging up all this stuff to detract from the other scandals from SNC and whatever. But
duh.
Yeah, but of course. Of course they are. And they all do it.
Liberals don't want to talk about their own scandals.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh.
I want to talk about his scandal, not my scandal.
Right.
You're just making scandals. It's like, well, the scandal's there, you know, for a reason. There was a – where is this candidate in Eastern Ontario somewhere? Eric Duncan, who is openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
He said on he's a conservative. He said on Tuesday that he feels welcome in the conservatives, and he wouldn't run if he thought that there was, you know, he wasn't welcome.
I'm sure that's true.
But you know, and hopefully we'll get to the day where, you know, they have to. Currently, it's an openly gay candidate. You know, who knows how many closed gay candidates are right now or have been in the past? There's obviously been lots. You know, will
John
we?
Bear.
You know, we'll uh-huh. We'll know. We finally peaked when we get to the point where it's like it's not even. We're almost there. We're almost there where the openly enclosed is just. It doesn't matter.
Well, Jim Watson just came out.
Yes. After what? Four. Well, he's 40 50
years.
Something. 58. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And then who was it? Was it Elizabeth May or something? Well, everybody knew. And she tweeted that to some effect like, well, everybody knew, but congratulations to you.
When you know someone well enough,
yeah,
you're gonna know.
You'll just know.
But, you know, it's...
But it's almost incredible that you think, you know, being in politics that long.
Yeah.
Because there was a time not that long ago where it became a smear thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like people definitely lost careers and all that because of whatever they're doing behind the scenes. They used to call it shenanigans. It's not really, it's just they're living their lives. But so this is the thing, but Scheer still, he didn't actually come out and, you know, like I said, he's still sticking to the dogma, whatever his dogma is. And I, you know, like that is his right. A good example to use Trudeau Sr. as an example, who they hate, still managed to stay a Catholic all of his life while putting together very, very progressive legislation because he knew where to draw the line between church and state.
Mm-hmm.
His belief system and whatever didn't necessarily cross over into his, you know, the legislation that he passed. Very big legislation back in the 60s about homosexuality, that line about the, you know, church or state having no place in the bedrooms of the
yeah.
nation. Famous statement. And for the 60s, that was huge. It was massive, right? He's still revered,
of
I think,
course,
to
Trudeau,
the state.
Trudeau,
too, Trudeau
was
is
speaking
like,
specifically about his bedroom, but...
And now with Junior, as soon as, you know, if the rainbow flag is almost unfurled, he's there, right? So it's a different universe. Because, you know, in that 60s era, it's like, well, there was no Pride parade, right?
Well, I mean, it thinking about the Trudeau era so far, is part of it has been this like whiplash effect of like Stephen Harper didn't go to Pride events either.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't,
but
I also wouldn't associate with, you know, Stephen Harper with joviality and happiness. And
God, even Doug Ford's been to a Pride parade. Now, it wasn't the Toronto one because he probably would have been booed.
Well,
yeah. And he didn't actually tell. Was it York? Wherever he went.
Yeah, it was York region.
No one knew he was coming.
He was like a surprise guest.
A little bit of an ambush. So
hold your booze. But I mean, that's the thing, too, is like Doug Ford has the fallback of like, well, police can't appear in uniform in that parade. And I like
yeah.
the police, so et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Andrew Scheer doesn't even justify it. He just doesn't go.
Well, I think he's previously justified it with his... It's a religious justification, really. And again,
still,
as I said, that's his right.
I'm pretty sure Trudeau's Catholic. I'm pretty sure the Sikhs have some harsh things to say about homosexuality. But, you know...
And that's true, but I mean, if it's going to bleed into your... to what your, you know, your potential being prime minister as opposed to a backbencher, like a kid as he was... I'm saying a kid. 25-year-olds are not children, but he just seems so young in this video, right? And he was a rookie MP, so let's call him the rookie back then. Something he also said back then, he was talking about he had a huge problem regarding the protection of religious institutions, talking about this, you know, the same-sex marriage legislation back then. So that was a comment read into the record back then on top of this speech as to his concerns. And I guess there are, you know, obviously legitimate concerns back then. And that's not to say that religious protection shouldn't be a concern now. But, you know, would that vote? You have to wonder if it was, you know, fast forward to now, we're going to have that vote again, how it would go. It would obviously go far more resounding, I think, towards same-sex marriage. And I don't know if that's because we've had it for as long now. It's, and we were one of the first countries, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's,
to officially
that's
one of those, say, like, yes, do this.
That was one of those arguments that was sort of like built on the slippery slope principle. It's like, oh, we're going to have secular marriage. Well, what's to stop the government, mean face, from saying, you know, to a church or a temple or something, like, you have to marry this gay couple. And it's like...
But the churches can opt out, right? Like,
there's always like an assumption that, like, we have a line here. The line is on church on one side, state on the other. Marriage is administered by the state because it is it's always been as much a citizenship or like a relationship, a social relationship contract, as it has been a religious contract.
Well, it's dual because, but, I mean, anybody can get a marriage license, but then the church one is different. There's going to be no same-sex marriages at church for Our Lady in our lifetime. It's just not going to happen.
I doubt it.
So, unless somebody wants to sneak one in and wink and cause some controversy. But yeah, so that's, you know, that the line is drawn, and I think that was in the legislation back then. So, you know, church, you really don't have anything to worry about. But it's the implication, I guess, from this, saying that, you know, you've got a problem with LGBTQ, right? That's what they're what's implied here. That
the greater problem, though, is that it shows this problem in the conservative campaign, that something like piddling like this, something that should have been easy to bat down with, like, this is just Trudeau and the Liberals trying to distract from SNC-Lavalin and Liberal corruption, and we're not going to freaking fall for it. He should have been able to do that. But Melanie Joly tweeted today that Andrew Scheer hasn't been seen by the press, or that he's been avoiding the media for 8 days, and I don't know if that's, like, true precisely, and I'm sure some of that, too, is, like...
Come to think of it, like...
I'm sure some of that, too, is that, you know, the G8 or G7 was going on and, you know.
Was he there?
No, but, like, what news can you make going on against that? But, you know, it's been several days since the G7 ended. And where has he been? I haven't seen him. I know Pierre Poilievre got up the other day to, when Catherine McKenna said, the French cartoon villain Pierre Poilievre. Catherine McKenna said, you know, $50 might not be the limit for the carbon tax. He goes, there you go! Busted! But, that should have been maybe, I don't know if that's maybe penny ante for Scheer, but I mean, he hasn't done like any announcements for a while or any public appearances for a while. And it seems like this has knocked him out for the time being, and the campaign hasn't even started yet.
Well, it has, but.
Well, it has, but it's like not official.
Supposedly there's signs up in places. Have you heard this?
No, but that's.
There's signs, like, I guess it, no, supposedly it depends on the jurisdiction. I thought it was wrong too, but it seems that it's all local, depends on where you are as to whether signs can go.
Well,
I was shocked.
Be that as it may, it just, it knocked him out, and it seems like, first of all, the nature of the Liberal attack, it's the same thing that Paul Martin did with Stephen Harper, trying to, like, get Stephen Harper for being in favor of the Iraq War. And
or the,
like, it's
Justin Striptease video.
Right. It's like, that's like, we're doing a deep dive. But on the other hand, it seems to have been effective. It seems to have knocked Andrew Scheer off the front page at a time where he should be able to capitalize on a lot of the stuff that Liberals are going on. And as we said earlier, he could have made a big deal about how Trudeau didn't make a particularly big impression at the G7.
But those socks.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He could have said, oh, that's Canadian leadership. Like, was Justin Trudeau even there? He could have done it, but he didn't.
He's been
knocked out by this. So he's like, he's got to pick up his game if he's going to be competitive.
He's relying on Levant and his friends at Rebel Media to do that for him, probably.
I hate to say it, but I'm worried that's the case.
Yeah. In my opinion.
We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about Trump, because who doesn't love talking about Trump? Oh, yeah. We know he doesn't.
I think we need to do 15 minutes on Melania in these days.
Forget Melania. We need to talk about Eric. He's up to some stuff. And we're also going to talk about Kashmir. I don't know if Eric's up to anything. Who cares? You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. The dignity of labor.
the pride in the 9-to-5 and the crook of the bended knee. And a man wants my telephone number, so drunk he can hardly see. And I know in the haze of rejection that he'll take it all out on me. Take it all out on me.
Respect your server. Tip your server. That is your Labor Day PSA for this year. That was Chumbawamba from their album The Boy Bands Have Won.
I've actually Chumbawamba. Lost.
Chumbawamba, the sweet, sweet sounds of anarchy.
The I Get Knocked Down band?
Yes, it is the I. Yes. A song that they never, ever do live. Although I think it paid some bills. Maybe a mortgage or whatever for the squat. I don't know.
Not as much as I Get Knocked Down and I Get Up Again.
Anyway, that song is called Compliments of Your Waitress. So, what is that from? I don't know. From a few years back. So.
Okay.
But still pertinent. So, happy Labor Day all.
Speaking of labor, there's some Republicans who are trying to, if not get Trump out of the way for the 2020 election, at least trying to hurt him. There was already one in the race, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld. Who was a Republican, and then it was joined this weekend by former Illinois representative, one-term representative, Joe
like
Walsh.
Obama? Yeah.
Well, except you know, Joe Walsh shouldn't go on to, you know, win the presidency twice.
Sorry, not Joe Walsh of the Eagles either, which is, I'm like, Joe,
no,
Walsh,
Joe,
yeah,
Walsh.
Joe Walsh. Yeah.
Also not John Walsh, host of America's Most Wanted.
That's right. Get some new names, guys. Come on. We can't. It's like Elizabeth May, Theresa May.
But Joe Walsh is a man who, before Trump's election, said that if Trump lost the election, he was going to grab his musket. A wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that if Trump didn't win the election, he was going to go all in for armed rebellion.
That sounds like Tea Party talk. And
he was a member of the Tea Party.
I'm going to get my musket.
So he hasn't. He's now seen the light, blinded by the light. He's now anti-Trump, and he's running against Donald Trump.
Yes, and who's the other? There's the list of possibles. Mark Sanford?
Mark Sanford, yeah.
Government and congressman from South Carolina.
Yeah, famous for disappearing with his mistress for a couple of days.
Yeah, what do they call it? The Appalachian Walk or something? There's some sort of code for, like, you know, I was actually walking in the mountains. No, you weren't. And John Kasich was tapped.
John Kasich he ran in the 2016 election. He wasn't the last to drop out. I think Ted Cruz was the last, but he was like one of the last. I think he's now like a professor or something, but he's also a CNN commentator. So.
And of course, Trump hit Twitter, as he does, labeling these current challengers the Three Stooges. They're all failures. And as you said, the shortcomings were listed in the affair. Weld is unfit because he fainted at a college commencement 20 years ago. So he had a fainting spell. And so he's not qualified because he fainted once 20 years ago.
Trump's arteries are like 60% mayonnaise, 30% ketchup, and 10% cheese. So I don't...
Walsh's radio show was a failure, and that's why he shouldn't run against him either. But this is, there is, history has shown that when the incumbent has challengers, now presumably strong challengers, but even any challenger to the sitting president doesn't help with the bottom line in terms of votes. Some examples were Pat Buchanan versus Bush in 92, sort of drew some of the strength away. Mm-hmm. And for a Democrat example, Carter versus Ted Kennedy, which I had completely forgotten about, maybe because I was only 10.
Which was almost a brokered convention. Like there was that much animosity. Like Kennedy kind of screwed the pooch on that because he famously... did an interview where the reporter asked him why he wanted to be president, and he like literally went hamana, hamana, hamana. And then
too many scotches, maybe
Something. But I mean, so but
my name's Kennedy. I should be president. Or something.
It kind of like his campaign kind of ended there, but it did go on, and it did just enough damage to Carter that there was no unity behind him going into 1980. But I mean, there's also like the Iranian hostage crisis and things.
Yes.
That hurt.
And the second
Carter.
That Reagan was elected, the hostages were let go. Fancy
thanks
that.
Thanks to Carter.
Thanks to Carter or to Reagan?
No, thanks. Because the story behind that is Carter was like negotiating like till like up till like the wee hours of the morning. The night before Reagan was sworn in, and the Iranians eventually said, okay, we'll let them go, but we're not letting them go until, you know, you've left office, so you're not going to get the credit.
Right. So Reagan got the credit.
So Reagan gets the credit, even though it was Jimmy Carter that was up all night on the phone with the Iranians.
Bless Jimmy Carter. But anyway, so...
He's still with us, gone. So yeah, he is blessed.
40 years later, at the age of 90, he is still with us, right? But he's left.
He's been to a lot of presidential funerals, I'm just saying.
So Trump's Twitter attacks, I mean, he used similar techniques to beat out the 16 others the last time.
Sure.
Like Lil Marco and Zodiac Killer. I don't know if... I don't know if Trump ever called Ted Cruz the Zodiac Killer, but
I know
I'm sure
Ted Cruz has acknowledged it, but
behind closed doors, he probably has.
Human President Ted Cruz.
But again, Trump does this whole thing. He's like, "Well, we're looking at it." Like he just will just say, "We're looking at it." Like
Ted
we're
Cruz
looking at
is
the fact
definitely
that,
one being and not many.
Still rocking.
Ted Cruz
the beard.
Jokes aside, everything, of course, has to be graded on in Trump adjusted terms. Like Trump,
that's a good way
as
to
you
put
said,
it.
Like yeah. there was very strong. Buchanan faction in the Republican Party
the contenders,
because
yeah.
He was further to the right than Bush 41. 41 was in the middle of a recession at the time, so people were looking for someone to blame on that. Mm-hmm. Carter, similar thing, foreign policy woes, domestic woes.
Inflation was really high.
All that. So they face strong challenges. The question is... because Trump has the support of like 80-85% of the Republican Party. Can we measure this in the same in Trump adjusted terms? And the other thing I will say is, and this was pointed out on Pod Save America on Monday, that Joe Walsh represents Trump's first challenge from the right. Bill Weld, because he was governor of Massachusetts, is famously pro-choice and mm-hmm. pro-trade.
He's more libertarian.
Yeah, he's more socially liberal. John Kasich is sort of like as what Bill Maher calls Republican classic, where it's just like he's pro-business, small government, that kind of thing. So those are guys like coming from the left of still on the right, but coming from Trump's left.
It's possible. The center?
Right. So Joe Walsh represents the first kind of challenge for Trump coming from the right. And of course, it's like the zany right. It's the Tea Party right. It's the
talk show host, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So he's going on about Trump doesn't care about the deficit and Trump doesn't care about how we look on the international stage, and so it's like very kind of
wrong. But do you want Joe Walsh to be?
But the president? Other thing that Dan Pfeiffer pointed out on Positive America was that Joe Walsh is a con artist too. he has that strat because I think he was cited 19 times for ethics breaches while he was in Congress, and again he was in Congress for 2 years. So
short-termer.
So, you get 19 times in 2 years. That's got to be some kind of record and probably not one you want.
No.
But, it also goes to Scaramucci, who has been making the rounds lately. Now he's a never-Trumper.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Scaramucci, who, less than 1 year ago, published a book talking about how Trump was, the best president and the best thing that ever happened to America since grilled cheese.
So proof that you can change your mind about stuff.
But of course, he's been all over TV since he started doing that.
He's liking
and
that
of
too.
Course, that's the point. It's like, I want to be all over TV. I want to be the cool guy. I want to be on Cuomo. I want to be on Maddow. I want to be on this show and that show and that show.
Because he was what? Comms director for a week? Which has to be some kind of record, right?
No, let's be fair. It was more like 10 days.
Okay. Let's give him almost 2 weeks. Make it sound better. So yeah, and it's... I think both Weld and Walsh, for their part, there's been talk about evoking the 25th Amendment, which is the one that if the VP, which this probably isn't going to happen, but if Pence and majority of the cabinet members said the president's unable to do the job, this came about, I think, after Kennedy's assassination, that they wanted this.
And famously evoked in the season 4 finale of The West Wing.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's two West Wing references. I'm going to have to get on that. Get on The West Wing. I didn't like the end of House of Cards. But anyway, that's we all of our frame of reference people is on TV
president,
shows.
So it's better.
Yeah. and have called Trump nuts, erratic, cruel, and have pointed out the fact that he doesn't give a damn. Again, they're not incorrect. But this is fellow Republicans. This is right. GOP members. And it isn't, you know, the race isn't, it's not, and they're off yet. But they're already bashing him. So,
well, and remember, too, that there's been a lot of economic indicators that the recession is coming, whether or not it's coming in times where it's going to have like an effect on the election, too. And the other thing I would keep in mind is that the Republicans have, like, Republicans who are on the outs, like people like Rick Wilson and Steve Schmidt and Anna Navarro, like Bill Kristol, those people who were never in the Trump car to begin with,
yeah,
have been looking for like the new Republican hero to quote unquote restore sanity to the Republican Party. And every time they try to find a standard bearer, it's somebody like Jeff Flake or Bob Corker or Susan Collins, people who like end up folding anyway. Remember, Jeff Flake's big thing was when he was cornered in the elevator by those women, yeah, about the Kavanaugh, and he goes back and he goes like he was like, it was like watching a Hugh Ambush. Grant movie where it's like, well, yeah, I think that
lots of eyebrows.
I think that, you know, all things considered, and you know, maybe we should just take a step back, and you know, I don't want to seem too pushy or anything, but you know, just looking at the facts and excuse my befuddlement, but like that was
his, so good, man. You gotta take that on the road. Yeah,
that was him. Yeah, standing
with an American accent, but yes.
Yeah. On Kavanaugh, but yeah, it's just, you know, Trump owns the party. And I think, I mean, who knows? There could be some kind of reckoning. It could be a recession that suddenly, like,
boom.
It's like that scene in the movie where there's a computer that's controlling everyone's brains blows up and everyone realizes they've been, you know, brainwashed for years. Could be that.
There is no sanctuary. Yeah.
But Trump's done so much. And it just kind of slides under the radar. And again, Marco Rubio, speaking of famous Trump adversaries,
yeah,
this week somebody asked him about, you know, well, what do you think about Trump, you know, suggesting the G7 happen at his club? And he's like, oh, it's in Florida. You know, I'm the senator of Florida, so I think it's great news. And somebody's like,
oh,
you ever heard of the emoluments clause? And he's like, it's all good. Yeah,
the party with no shame. And anything post-Trump is just like, it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
Except for maybe murder. Like, it's not going to...
I don't think murder would matter.
Yeah, maybe. I could shoot a guy in Fifth Avenue. Yeah.
I honestly don't think... Like, yeah, it's like, yeah, might not. Damn right you shot that libtard! Or something to that effect.
Yeah. All sides. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of all sides...
That's a good segue.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a world news story that's kind of gone under the wire, even though it's like one of the most dangerous regions on the planet.
Yep.
There's this area in India called, well, not in India, but it's between India and Pakistan. It's called Kashmir. Going all the way back to 1947, this area has been under dispute. It was given a great deal of autonomy under the Indian government. It has its own constitution, its own flag, its own kind of rules. It basically controls itself with the exception of things like foreign affairs and defense, or I should say, it used to.
Yes, it doesn't control itself anymore.
Because
right.
Earlier this month, the BJP party, which is the ruling party in India, revoked Article 370, which is the article that let Kashmir govern itself. This was an election province promise made by Narendra Modi during the election campaign, which an earlier episode from either April or May.
I was going to say the West Wing, but yeah.
Kashmir
must make an appearance.
I'm pretty sure the West Wing dealt with Kashmir at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely remember that. But yeah, so it's been a tense situation there. It's been getting more violent, and it seems to be a lack of diplomacy on the part of India. That's Modi said he was going to get tough on Pakistan, and this he has accomplished.
Yeah, so the crackdown has been under the guise of a terror threat. It's a lockdown of sorts. They haven't actually used any of this language. I'm saying that, but it's pretty much martial law at this point.
They did everything that you do in martial law, except call it martial law.
Communications are down. No internet or very patchy. Travel curfews, roadblocks are putting up that concertina wire where just you can't drive anywhere. Yeah. And it sounds like one of the TV stations there is conveying messages to people. You want to talk about old media. On the crawl, it's like, you know, tell dad I'm all right. You know, that is how messages are getting out. And maybe that will be brought to a to a standstill as well. And of course, they're gassing people and shooting at them with pellet guns in the name of public safety. And this is like, as you were saying there about the after the partitioning, currently Kashmir, as the greater region is divided into three, with Pakistan controlling the west, India, it's actually Jammu. I didn't know this until I Google mapped it, Jammu. Mm-hmm. And Kashmir, and China controls a portion, the portion that attaches to the Indian section. Now, in 1947, there was the great question, who are we going to join? And they decided, well, we're going to join India. And of course, that there was a conflict over that. I think there's been three wars fought over this mm-hmm. territory. And it's one of those areas you only really hear about when this kind of thing happens. So Modi and the gang are doubling down. And it sounds like there's been mass arrests as well, which is another symptom of martial law. If mm-hmm. I understand it right, they said there's at least 2,000 people have been rounded up for various reasons as to whether they've been let go. And this is because there's no information getting in or out. There's no foreign media there to speak of unless somebody's doing it on the quiet. And I don't think they are. Mm-hmm. We really have no idea what's going on there. And of course, the great question is, what is next? Are they going to make play for the rest of Kashmir? China won't be too happy about their section being affected by this.
Well, apparently what's going on is they're trying to, I guess, enforce. Because what's happened is they basically put like the past governors of Kashmir under house arrest. Mm-hmm. The person who was the current, premier or governor of this area, she doesn't have any authority anymore. It's all basically coming from Delhi. And what they want is they want to split the Indian-controlled areas into two pieces, which would then theoretically make it easier to control. And of course, it's all going to be controlled through Delhi. But yeah, it's a three-pronged international incident because the people in the area were promised autonomy. They want autonomy. Mm-hmm. Even going back to the 47... the creation of India, it was supposed to be that Kashmir was supposed to decide what it wanted to do itself. There was supposed to be a referendum, but it was always too violent for the UN to really set anything up. And so it's had this kind of, I guess, neutral status, this kind of like purgatory status where like they were aligned with India just because they didn't like some of the stuff coming from Pakistan.
Even though 60% of Kashmir, of Indian-controlled Kashmir is
Muslim.
And the Chinese quarter is actually fairly Buddhist, if I understand it right. It's it's Ladakh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ladakh. So there's a sectarian angle to this as well, as there was with the entire partitioning of Indian, Pakistan, Bangladesh in 1971. All of that is lines drawn due to faith.
Yeah.
Not purely, but that's... it was a train wreck back then. Sorry, I don't know.
That's kind of what they're getting at now.
Yeah,
is it's going to be the majority one side, another majority on the other side.
Because that still means a lot and carries a lot of weight there.
Right, and then meanwhile, China is like this. I don't know how high this is on China's list of foreign affair priorities, but I mean, China's making rumblings that they're not happy about what India is doing. Pakistan's saying like, oh, we're gonna go to the UN and see how this sorts out. Meanwhile, tensions are rising between Pakistan and India. India's launching air attacks on Pakistan. Pakistan's, rumbling. Mm-hmm. Right back, and it's dangerous because these are two nuclear powers, and we kind of forget that because when they got the bomb, I remember I'm old enough to remember in the 90s there was a lot of concern about what it means like for these two powers to have the bomb, and wasn't like going to be a fait accompli that they were going to bomb each other, and that isn't what has occurred. Mutual assured destruction has held.
Mm-hmm.
But, who knows what might happen? Because, again, there's such a vacuum of world leadership that something like this can go under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have global news assets in the area. We don't have Western news assets in the area to sort of, like, give us the straight dope and what it means for the average person on the street in that region. So everything we're hearing, and we're hearing second, third, fourth, fifth hand.
Yeah, and there is a little bit of that leaking out where they've spoken to a bit of word on the street stuff, mostly from people who run businesses that just want to keep doing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like some, you know, the run of the mill things are running, like there's no food shortages or anything yet, but it's probably only a matter of time.
Yeah.
India said, they said when they did this that they were trying to ensure that the nation's laws are equal for all citizens in the name of public safety. But, you know, I don't know. We need to wait and see as to where this is going to go. It's, I think everything they're doing is a bit of a test case. Like, how far can we go before somebody starts to rattle? Is it going to be China? Is it going to be Pakistan? Is it going to be, like, where is the resistance, I guess, going to come from? My guess is
that's
China,
what it feels like, because it's been a game of like escalation. Because you know, you go back to,
it's like, it's been 70 years. We should just do this now. Yeah,
like, right. You go back to like Modi was elected for the first time in 14, 17. There's supposed to be this regional conference in Pakistan, and Modi takes a powder. And 18, you have like a real flashpoint. You have like 500 people, that's soldiers, that's civilians. Who are all killed in Kashmir and related to like political protests and political violence.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's kind of.
And the suicide bombing that supposedly prompted this was in, I think it was it February? It was much earlier this year. There was this incident where I think it was 40 odd paramilitaries were killed.
Yeah.
By a suicide bomber. So you would have thought that if that was the case, they would have, brought in what is essentially martial law then. And this, I don't think we're, it's not like a Ireland 1969 situation where there's a continuous incidents going on. So where is this coming from? It's one grand test case, right? It's just like, well, what
it was. Well, it was one like 40 dead soldiers is nothing to sneeze at.
No, no, no. Bombing, sorry. But, I didn't mean that sounded like it was.
No, I wasn't saying you did, but
it is like, yeah, it's like, okay, you let that go.
To completely repeal the autonomy of an area and say, like, no, we're taking over now.
You waited 6 months.
Seems like an incredible, overextension of your power and authority.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's why it does sort of feel like Modi's sort of poking things with a stick and trying to see where it ends up.
Yeah. Cool. Unfortunately. So hopefully it doesn't end up in, like you say, mutually assured destruction. But
yeah.
Wow.
So we'll leave you with that for the holiday weekend. Speaking of the holiday weekend, you're going to be doing some music on Monday.
Yes, we're playing the Labor Day, my traditional set, it would seem, and has evolved to that at the Labor Day barbecue. High noon at Riverside Park at the Red Pavilion, and there'll be hot dogs and samosas. Samosas is quite good. And lots of other tabling and things put on by the Guelph and District Labor Council, so come check it out. Things are a buck. Everything's a buck.
Cool.
I might even serve you a hot dog. I ended up doing that last year. So pressed into service once again.
I have weekend plans too. I will be on the air on CFRU at high noon, actually, on Saturday.
Excellent.
I'll be doing a shift for move-in day. And so we'll be talking to some new students and student organizations and watching the madness unfold on move-in day. That is this Saturday, madness. August the 31st. If you have any designs of driving up Gordon Street on Saturday from dawn till dusk, think again. There is the road closure will be in effect. And any other Open Sources related news, you can find us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite from your favorite podcast app on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on the weekends here. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can check out my news and politics site at GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And, well, I've got a repeat of DJ Sounds Good to Me
here
at the top of the hour.
And, from March 14th.
She will likely be back next week. I don't want to make any promises, but I mean, I think everybody's coming back next week, so we'll see what happens.
Get ready. Brace for impact.
Absolutely. We will still be here. We'll be here next Tuesday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we'll see you then.